episode 229.
You can learn the same thing in any given setting, and what you take away from it because of the interaction and the people you're with is going to be completely different. So I think the caliber of people that are there and your peers attending with you really, really make the difference. And then those relationships and the conversations that come later make a big difference in what you're receiving as far as that education goes.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional.
On Point.
Hey, welcome, aftermarket professionals, to Remarkable Results Radio and to episode 229, the third in a three-part series on the University of the Aftermarket's Leadership 2.0 Executive Leadership Course. Hey, this is Carm Capriotto, your host. This episode is brought to you by Federal-Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. As you've discovered, there are so many sources to listen to the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Now, one additional you may not know about is the Remarkable Results Radio app for any iOS or Android device. Want it? Just go to your app store, search for Remarkable Results Radio, and install. And 2 minutes later, you'll have all the episodes at your fingertips. It's easy, and it's free. Hey, you can find this week's show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E229, and there you'll find my guest's bio and key talking points from this episode. Hey, just before you hear part three with Sierra Bogota, I want to remind you of the weekly live Town Hall Academy forum that is every Friday at 12 noon Eastern. You get a documentary-like forum of your industry peers that drive a discussion on a single trending subject. Now, if you missed the Live Academy, you can always watch every forum in HD video on my learning page. Go to remarkableresults.biz/learning and even create lunch and learn time around the Academy replays. You know, I have a kinship to the University of the Aftermarket's Leadership 2.0 program. I was a graduate back when it was called 2010, just a few years ago. Because I know so many different professionals that are alumnus of Leadership 2.0, I thought it perfect addition to the podcast prospectus. I felt that a three-part series with a program graduate would bring value to the aftermarket and showcase this real important educational opportunity. You may not even know that Leadership 2.0 is an intense and intellectually challenging two-week executive development and learning experience. It's deeply rooted in the theoretical and practical application of automotive aftermarket leadership principles. Now, previous attendees have represented manufacturing, retail operations, warehouse distributors, association management, program group management, and yes, service professionals. Now, the service professionals I've spoken to that have attended Leadership 2.0 tell me their understanding of the aftermarket was expanded, and their respect for the importance of their role in the auto care industry was solidified. Lifelong friends from all segments of the industry are formed at Leadership 2.0. Brian Cruikshank, the director of the University of the Aftermarket at Northwood University, and I spoke about doing this series, and he was quick to offer me a graduate of this year's class to interview. You can also hear Brian on his own episode, number 75. Now meet Sierra Pagoda, sales manager at DePaco in Reno, Nevada. I'm delighted, and so will you, to hear Sierra talk about her experience at Leadership 2.0. As you will discover, she brings an energizing insider's view of this executive-level course. This is part three, and we talk about the project, her favorite segment from the week, her biggest takeaway from the course, and the service professional case study, along with core values, among others. Now, keep in mind, there are two additional episodes that round out the series. Part 1, episode 227, discusses the first weekend. Part 2, episode 228, discusses the project, networking, and autonomous cars. See the show notes page for the episode talking points and additional bio information. Now, meet Sierra Pagoda, sales manager, DePaco. I'd like to welcome Sierra Pagoda, the sales manager of DePaco, to our special series discussion on Leadership 2.0 and her personal experience at this University of the Aftermarket program. Hi, Sierra.
Hey, Carm. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Hey, well, this is our third series. I'm excited to have done three of these with you. First, we covered your first week. In the second episode of the series, we covered your project and the time off between the two week-long sessions. And now I'd like to talk about that final week. And I know that final week includes working together with your team and actually doing the presentation. But of course, the final week is still incredibly engaging, from conflict management, negotiation skills for leaders, a couple of case studies, Six Sigma. I'd love to find out what you took away with that. And aftermarket supply chain topics. What was your favorite? I mean, you know, if you look back to all the great classes that were given, what was the one that you say, I can use this?
The one I thought was really, for me, interesting. I like to learn about people and where their strengths and weaknesses are and how they play together. And we did one that was, we had to split up and take a little survey on if we were trapped in the woods, and it gave us this whole scenario. You're trapped in the wilderness. Here are your supplies. Are you going to walk? Are you going to stay? You know, here's the weather, all of that. And then we were given supplies and we had to rank them in order of importance from survival. Then we redid that with our team to see where, as a team, we would agree what to keep and what to get rid of. And I was just glad I wasn't voted off the island as far as we're going to get rid of you. So, you know, and it was different things from like water purification tablets to like an inner tube. There was matches. There was all sorts of different stuff. I think there was some rum or some whiskey there. And it was interesting to see what you prioritized versus your team and then how it came out. And we had to give a scoring level. And at the end, they told us what the quote unquote professionals would have chosen. And we compared, were you better off as a team or were you better off as an individual? And then the why. And I think everybody was better off definitely as a team. Very few people were better off and had better survival skills as an individual. And so it kind of tied into the fact that doing that group project, we were all better off as a team. Or, you know, when you look at your own company and the teams you're on, don't dismiss people, don't dismiss ideas so quickly, because your survival rate actually could be significantly better by taking everybody into account.
That almost tied into the first week when you guys did the IOPT, the input output processing template, isn't it? Because you were really trying to find people's strengths and weaknesses and best ideas and team play.
Yeah, it was funny. And we had a guy on our team who used to be in the military. So I was like, oh man, you're definitely going to have a leg up on all of us. And no, it really wasn't, you know, anything that he definitely had a leg up on us for. So it was fun.
Did any one person have the best ideas, or was it really a consortium?
I think I had the best ideas. No, it was, there were some where, I'll say for me, so the one I definitely remember was water purification tablets. I kept telling them, they're just tablets. It's not water. They're just tablets. It doesn't matter if we have these tablets. And everybody kept kind of pushing for the tablets. And in the end, they were ranked the lowest. And I said, you guys, it's because they're tablets. They're not, you know, they purify the water if you have water. First, we need to get water. Then you can purify it. But there was a lot of things like the detail in what was an option to keep. And like I read one, I thought I could use it for shelter. And one of the guys in my group said, it's only like 11 inches by 12 inches. What the heck are you going to cover? And I missed that detail in reading it. So as a group, we definitely were a lot better, but for various reasons. And half of it was comedy and half of it truly was you miss details or you miss picking out certain things that really are to your benefit, where all the brains process different.
Isn't it amazing? I'll bet you you're a better leader because of that class.
I sure hope so. That's for sure. I take a lot more time to sit back and process before responding. Sit back and take a little more time to digest others' opinions and their feedback, because we're so quick to respond in most situations rather than listen. You know, and my mom always told me, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. You're supposed to listen twice as much, right? And we all hear it even going into leadership classes. So now I find myself, I'll take a little more time to really think and consider, okay, why? And did I hear them properly, or did I skip over some of those words? Like, you can skip over the details.
Yeah, you know, we covered listening in your first session, and there was some really good dialogue there. Now, is any training good training? And what I mean is, if you think about the training that you've had in your career, you're not a sales manager unless you've improved yourself along the way to have this great career that you have. Is Leadership 2.0, like, so far an off the charts session that you've ever been to based on the quality of the education?
The investment that most companies are making in their people nowadays, I think, is very different than the investment that they, I'm going to say, formerly made in their employees. So what I found is, as the company I work for, Topaco, has done a phenomenal job of investing in training for us, both personally and professionally, for making sure that we are good leaders. So in a lot of cases, depending on where the person was in their experience within their company, they've received a lot of training. So some of it very much was a recap or rehasher, you know, touching on some things that we've already maybe learned. I can't say that everybody has, but definitely for me, there was a lot that was repeat. But with that, and as a caveat of that, you're also not going to learn as much if you don't have that caliber of people in your class to challenge, to make you think, and to make you grow. You can learn the same thing in any given setting, and what you take away from it because of the interaction and the people you're with is going to be completely different. So I think the caliber of people that are there and your peers attending with you really, really make the difference. And then those relationships and the conversations that come later make a big difference in what you're receiving as far as that education goes.
Give me an idea of the makeup of the class between, and I don't need to know the exact details, but there were WDs, manufacturers, distributors, and shop owners. Am I right?
Correct. Yes. And we even had a guy who worked at a auto body repair facility where they did a lot of paint work and collision repair, which was a first from my understanding, that they really hadn't had anybody come from that venue before. And that was very neat to see because you really got a whole broad spectrum. And Brian does a great job in the mornings. He starts us out with these icebreakers and they build throughout the week. So you start with kind of a easy conversation, and then as the week goes, they all tie in together and they kind of snowball. And you can definitely, it's fun to sit back, watch the conversations, but also you can kind of watch some people squirm in their chair. You can watch when people start to get a little bit uncomfortable. The comfort level of the conversations, definitely round two, flowed better because now you know people, you have that interaction, so you're not quite as afraid. I would say there wasn't as much hesitation to speak up, speak out, have that dialogue.
Why hesitation? What do you mean?
That first week, you don't really know who's going to speak up, who's going to speak out, who necessarily you're really talking to, who you could offend, all those types of things. So people kind of test the waters first. Second time around, it's like old hat. Every person I saw, it was either a big hug or, you know, a great welcome, that's for sure. Great to see everybody. And so the conversations just flowed a little bit more. And I think people really knew that nothing was personal. It was all, that's why we were there. To continue those conversations and really dig deep and not just gloss over the, you know, the perception.
The dynamics of the team mesh together in week two, and you actually take deeper dives then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the conversations that stem from every topic that were presented are much better as well. Yeah.
I'm talking with Jonathan Ciccelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Now, you're visiting shops every day, so when you put product in the hands of the technicians and service advisors, what are they saying?
Going back to Federmogul's long-term presence in the industry, they already know the product, and some of them we don't have to say much about. It's the newer product, the latest innovations that we come out with that just blow people away.
So, Jonathan, you take that brand new OEX pad, and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
They look at it and are kind of speechless for a couple seconds, and they just can't deny that it's an awesome looking product, and they can't deny that it's going to work fantastic on their vehicles.
Now, another phenomenal product line that is just one of the most iconic brands in the entire industry is Moog. Now, there's a lot going on with Moog.
The newest thing with Moog is going to be, I think, the most important thing to the shops is the newer design ball joint that we created, and that was off of technicians' responses to a boot design.
That's that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
Absolutely. And as soon as I pull that out of a box and show a technician or a shop owner, they just were like, this is amazing.
So, Jonathan, would you say that you're a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts and all the premium products?
Absolutely.
And a champion for all the training?
I'm very big on training. I've always been in training since I've been in the professional field, so just to come back and support on the other end has just been an awesome experience.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Everyone in the industry has to sell the service professional. Yeah, the DIY is there. There's no doubt. But as technology moves, we know that the do-it-for-me business is really up there and strong and important for the manufacturing and the distribution business. Now, there were service professionals in your group?
Yes.
And is it true that you did a case study on one of them? or at least not one of them that was there, but did you do a case study on a service professional?
We did.
How important was that for the entire group to appreciate, get inside, to empathize with the challenges?
It was very good. I think when you dive into any company that maybe you're not a part of, right? So for most of us, we're not a part of that service dealer side. We may have them as a client, as a customer, we may service them, but to be in their day-to-day life, it's very different, right? Just if they were to step out and become any one of us, regardless of where we are in the industry. And that was it was definitely a good eye-opener, I guess you'd say. And the fact that we all very much came to the conclusion of, regardless of what the day-to-day is, no matter where you are in the industry, without each other, we don't survive. So be careful who you're beating up and be careful, you know, what you're taking for granted. And, you know, it is a food chain. It's like the circle of life, right? We all have to work together. And if we don't, we're going to be in trouble because we've got a lot of challenges ahead of us as far as the industry.
I love that. What a huge takeaway that was. Stop beating them up.
No matter where you are. No matter where you are in the chain.
The service dealer needs to stop beating up his jobber. The jobber needs to stop beating up the WD, and so on.
Yeah, and if we could teach the consumers a little bit to, it's the most complex piece of technology we have is our vehicle, right? If I call to get my washer or dryer fixed, it's a good 2-week wait, and they'll show up in a certain amount of hours, and a part's got to be ordered. But the most critical piece of technology and the most complex piece of technology that we rely on every day is our vehicle, but we expect it to go in, get fixed, and be done by the end of the day so that we can move on with our lives. So it is a constant drive, and the expectation is very high for the time being repaired to the cost of it being repaired and how well it's done. And that is something that I think as an industry, we've done a good job of keeping up on, but at the same time, it comes with some very high demand.
Yeah. We haven't told the consumer enough about what it takes to be a technician engineer, the equipment that we need to have, the training that we need to get, the complexity of the vehicle, the ever yearly changing, the different models, the different systems that are out there. And not we, but the consumer thinks it's magic. And why should it cost that much?
Yeah, they're not technicians. They are magicians, that's for sure, because they are truly performing what most industries cannot do day in and day out. And as the vehicles become more technologically advanced, the emerging technologies that we talked about in the last episode was, you know, it's going to be harder and harder. How do you replace a chip? And what do they keep on hand? And who keeps them on hand? And, you know, is it correct? Because it's more and more electronic. And the more electronic we go, the more opportunity there is for, I'm going to say, more opportunity there is for opportunity, because we try to not see challenges as troubles, but more so as an opportunity to resolve. So,
as a takeaway, and you said, hey, stop beating each other up. When it came to the service professionals case study, what was your biggest aha moment as you were learning about their struggles?
That not all of them go into it being business owners or business minded, right? It is that they are guys or gals who really enjoy doing what they're doing, but they weren't necessarily business, small business owners. They didn't go into it expecting that.
This is the theme of the podcast over and over and over again. They were great technicians, but they didn't make the leap to be, you know, the CEO of their business. And that hit you hard, huh?
Yeah, I really feel that, you know, they're technicians who have, by some chance, because they're very good at what they do, become small business owners. They're not small business owners who went in saying, I'm going to be a technician. The way they service people day in and day out, doing what they know and what they love, is very different than had it been run, you know, by a small business owner going in to then, you know, become a technician or try and do that. And if it was the other way around, those cars would not be serviced very well at all if a small business owner came in and tried to do what they do every day. So that was a big one.
Sierra, I see that there was a course titled Business Ethics for Leaders. It's so important today.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the biggest things people are looking for is where they can go to a job, if you will, and even deal with companies, whether they're going to a service dealer and they just want to have a, you know, ethically sound, you know, guy or gal working on their vehicles. But the companies we work for, we spend more time with them than we do our families. And, you know, the numbers are big. The numbers are big, and they're a reflection of how companies are performing day to day. So in that ethical conversation, we really talked about, you know, what's driving that culture, what are driving those ethics, and what makes people put their ethics aside when those numbers are becoming critical. And one of the best things Dr. Frank told us was, you know, what are your core values? And you better know and recognize them now because the time to question them is not when you're in a position that is, you know, questioning.
Are you talking personal or business core ethics? Core values, I mean.
Core values, part of it was, what are your personal? Because then it'll reflect in your business, and you're not going to make a shift in your personal core values when you're sitting in a business meeting and they're asking you to, you know, push something under the rug or make some numbers kind of shady or do something that really would jeopardize your own personal ethics, because you know that that's not who you are inside.
So personal ethics first. And then you need to be sure you're working for a company that aligns with them.
Absolutely. So that was a big one. And that really, for me, it was taking care of your people and taking care of and listening to your people. We talked about listening quite a bit, but taking care of your people, making sure that everybody is, I don't want to say comfortable, but that's the best word I can think of right now, that, you know, they're comfortable and they're performing at their best capacity, which means ethically things are going well. You know, they're driven, there's a good culture, and they're challenged by what they're doing. Taking care of your people, your numbers are going to take care of themselves, and your customers are going to be happy, which in turn means your numbers are going to take care of themselves. So then you're not going to most likely come up with those ethical challenges that some companies come up against because things aren't going well.
Did they do any case studies at all on that?
It tied in with it, and it was Avon and Tiffany's, and how different they are. They're a totally different customer base, and how they, you know, you have to know who you're going to approach with your product and how you're going to factor in your logic, because the dominant logic of one person is not the dominant logic of another person. So if you don't understand your customer base, they're going to actually start questioning your ethics based on the services you're giving them.
You're saying if you're going to market in the wrong way, they may question the ethics?
Right. So if you're a Tiffany's customer, right, you've got this very lovely blue packaging, and I think it was their watch repair department. It used to take them a couple weeks or a couple months to get their watches returned to their customers. The customers grew to expect that because, you know, it was such a valuable piece of jewelry. Well, they sped things up and got it to where the turnaround time was very short. And then the customer started thinking, well, you've kind of cheated me and you've shorted me, because this is a very expensive piece of jewelry. How did you fix it so quickly? Kind of funny if you think back to the automobile repair, right? We want it now. It's the most expensive thing most of us own. But how you have to figure out what that logic of your customers is and where they value their money. And, you know, are you in line with that?
Wow, that's interesting. It almost sounds more on a marketing level than it is on the ethics level. But I guess you're right. What is the makeup of my customer, and am I meeting their expectations? And if our core values are right, then I guess you don't fix the watch in 3 days. You keep it 2 weeks, right? Even though you can, right? Just because you can doesn't mean you should, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Interesting. Boy, thanks for that. That was a little nugget that fell off the tree. Now, I'm sure somewhere along the line, you all had a little lesson or some discussion on IT. Give me your takeaways on IT.
I'm going to say, obviously, IT is, like you said, it's kind of taking over the world. It's taking over everything we do. Just while we were sitting in class, it was hysterical to see most people had one or two cell phones. We had internet bandwidth for the room we were in. You know, you have the internet acceptance for the room we were in. But with everybody, 40-some-odd people in a room with 1 to 3 devices each, it got sucked up pretty quick. So that just showed right there how much IT we're using. But one of the biggest things was that most large suppliers have larger IT departments now than parts departments, because they're figuring out where to send the stock, how to get it, how to have that availability. Really, the logistical side is very heavily IT, getting things where they need to be and how all the computer systems talk to each other to figure out that availability, what the options are for that, I'll call it parts department. Where can you source it? How fast can you get it? What are your 3 or 4 or 5 plus options for that part? And it's really changing the way we function and we operate, because it now drives from the service dealer having that stock level as well, is that they expect the WD or their local warehouse to have the inventory for them, because they can look, they can find it, and they can get it there.
Yeah, it goes back to being magic again. There's a lot of IT touch points that all have to work together. And what they were really saying is that the investment is large to make it work so fast, or to have it look seamless, in other words, the right part at the right time, in the right place for the right customer.
Exactly. And I think it was IHS Worldview. It's IHS Worldview 2.0, very similar to Leadership 2.0, but IHS Worldview 2.0 is formerly Polk, and how they're really working to get all of that, you know, the data integrated, and what they do as far as the service level and all the different services they provide. I know one of the guys in our class talked about how they ask for the license plate of their customer. And with that license plate, it pulls up all the registration info and it gives them the exact vehicle so it can't go wrong, which is before, that's something you wanted the engine serial number for, that's something you wanted the VIN for, but now it's by license plate. And that was really interesting. And then there's international companies trying to get international integrations so that you're not just limited to the information in the US, but all the different makes and models, you know, India, China, wherever you may be, that I think it's called TechDoc, if I remember correctly, and it would integrate with ACES. So
from your perspective at DePaco, are you do you see a lot of IT movement in that area in your company?
Definitely, especially within the last 3 or 4 years, you really see a push. You know, we're just really very new to the automotive aftermarket as far as getting into that distribution side. So for us, it's been a real eye-opener because, you know, we've got ACES, PIES, we work with SEMA Data Co-op, all of those things, and it's a big step from the traditional marketplace that we've sold in. So it's a huge push, that IT side, and then, you know, people want it now. And if they can't find it now, you're out. So if we don't have it available, That's going to fall on us.
So from an IT perspective, were many in the class just throwing up their hands and saying, you know, I just don't think I could afford to do what needs to be done?
No, it actually surprised me how many people, their companies have just, I don't want to say tons of money, but they have a very significant amount of money invested in IT and invested in moving forward and how they're going to do that. And, you know, pods and pods of people and even structures within their company are set up to support IT.
Yeah, my point was about jobbers and the investment that they need to make. Yet, you know, being aligned with some really progressive WDs, they're going to help that jobber with that structure, I believe.
Yeah, very true. And I think that absolutely is a great point.
Boy, did I enjoy these three episodes talking to you about Leadership 2.0. And the beauty of it is that I've been through it when it was called 2.10. So I can kind of relate, not 100%. I know it's completely different, not completely different, but the structure of the class is there. And for me, it was a very powerful part of my career. If you had a chance today to just sit down and talk to a peer in the industry and say, you need to go, and here's why, what would you say?
Oh, I would absolutely tell them that they need to go. And the why is that they will make connections and they will understand the industry so much better. But the connections and the relationships that they have moving forward are really invaluable. There are 40 plus people that I know I could email or call today, tomorrow, whenever I need to, even for reference on something. Hey, you know, I was just thinking about this, and from your perspective, not necessarily because I need something from them, but because I trust them and I know them and we have that relationship. So I think it really broadened my perspective and then my connections throughout the industry. You know, and you hate to refer it as a networking thing, but really I don't, because that's one of the best things we took away from it. I don't want people to go and think, oh, this is just a great way for me to network. But really, it is one of the best networking in a positive way, not just a bunch of people standing around talking to people they already know.
It's networking on steroids, really.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
So, give a shout out to Brian and thank him for holding the seminar.
Yes, huge thank you to Brian and Dr. Frank, and then Susan. Susan helps coordinate everything, and she does a great job. But Brian and Frank they do a great job leading this course, and I can't thank them enough for what they did. So, I want to thank Yang because I earned my scholarship through Yang, and it is a great up and coming group. And so, under 40, if you've got if you can, be a part of Yang. And I thank them so much for the scholarship and for the opportunity to go to Leadership 2.0.
Yang is the Young Automotive Network Group.
Yes, you are correct.
So anyone under 40 should join.
Yes.
And be part of it. You guys do a lot of meetups. I know there's a lot of activities.
Yeah, there's regional meetups. And then we've got, we meet at Spring Leadership Days. This year it is in San Antonio. And we meet at Spring Leadership Days. And then they have events at Apex. So they're really doing a great job. And that actually, Yang, stemmed from the Leadership 2.0 class. It was a project that was started a couple years back. And they've done a great job growing it. And I hope to continue to see that go.
Thank you, Brian, for recommending Sierra to come on the show. And I sure do hope, and believe me, I don't need to hope. You really hit it out of the ballpark in these last three episodes. So thank you for your insights and sharing some of the insider stuff on Leadership 2.0.
Well, thanks for thinking of me. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sierra Pagoda, for your insights into Leadership 2.0, the University of the Aftermarket's Executive Development and Learning Program. This was part three in a three-part series with Sierra. Hey, in episode 227, we discuss week one, and in part two of the series, episode 228, we talk project, networking, and autonomous cars. Find Sierra's bio, special links, and the show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E229. Hey, share, tell a friend about these digital audio broadcasts from aftermarket professionals that bring insights, trends, best practices, and most importantly, stories of personal achievement. Hey, don't hesitate to reach out to me via email at carm@remarkableresults.biz. Thanks so much for your loyal support of the podcast. Don't hesitate to use the tag cloud or the series filter to zero in on your area of interest. And thanks for being a loyal listener.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.